Aleo Say is a lawful permanent resident who came to the United States as a refugee from the Liberian Civil War when he was 15 years old. In Liberia, Aleo was kidnapped, tortured, and forced to become a child soldier by rebel militias. Since his escape, he has built a life for himself and his four young daughters, who are U.S. citizens. Nonetheless, the U.S. government sought to deport Aleo based on two minor misdemeanor offenses, for which he received no jail time. Even though Aleo posed no danger or flight risk and had a strong claim of permanent relief from removal, the government refused to consider his release from detention while he fought his case on the grounds that his misdemeanor convictions subjected him to mandatory detention. Aleo was forced to choose between abandoning his right to remain in the United States and returning to Liberia, or enduring an indeterminate period of imprisonment in immigration detention. Ultimately, through the work of the Pennsylvania Immigration Resource Center, Aleo won his case and was released from detention. However, his 5 months of detention caused tremendous hardship to him and his four small daughters. It also resulted in the loss of his job as a machine operator. In this podcast, ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project attorney Michael Tan interviewed Aleo during his detention at the Pike County Correctional Facility in Lords Valley, Pennsylvania.
Aleo, can you tell me a little bit about how you first came to the United States?
When the war started in Liberia, my mother, she was working for the Liberian government at the time, and being a store, her mother's name was Taylor, which of course is like, kind of like related to Charles Taylor, but nobody on his side knew that we wasn't really related to him and everything, but the government soldiers thought we were, so they tried to kill us, and my mother left. Because in fear that if they was going to crush us all together, it would have been a bigger slaughter. So she left us there with her friend. And as we tried to walk from Monrovia to Guinea, I got captured. Because those soldiers was like, well, you guys are not leaving. Because your mother is a Taylor and where your mother's hiding at. And you should know where the rest of the Taylor family is at, which was the rebel leader at the time. And I got beaten, I got burned, I got cut with machetes. And on that way to the next town, they got overthrown by Taylor forces, which was a serious gunfight and battle. Luckily for us, we was just like hiding in the woods. We didn't get killed, and we got captured, and I got put on firing squad to get killed. And the CO, which is commanding officer, said, "Nah, we can use him as a soldier."
So you did manage to make it to safety in the United States as a refugee, and I know the following year, you got your green card, you became a lawful permanent resident, and tried to make a new life for yourself here in the United States. Can you tell me about the life you had before you were in detention?
It was a beautiful life, because I was in school, you know, I was working on trying to start a family of my own, and fortunately for me, God had blessed me with two beautiful daughters, and unfortunately, their mom wasn't like up to par. But legally, the state of Pennsylvania and partially the state of New York found me capable enough to like get full custody of my daughters, you know. After I went to parenting class, did my home evaluation plan, I had to get my daughters in school. Now, their life is in lingo, because they're with their mother, and the state of Pennsylvania and New York deemed that their mother are not capable enough to be with them alone by herself at any time, so...
Right, right. So you actually have four daughters altogether, right?
Yeah, I got four daughters. Two is just like, they live right down the street from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no custody issue between me and the mother, but I got locked up. And right now, I haven't been there for them at all. Like, that's killing me, because it's like the same fear of the Civil War growing up without my father, without my mother. That's what they're going through.
You know, I can imagine, since you've been in immigration custody for about 4 months now, can you maybe just elaborate more on how your detention, your being away, has affected your daughters and you?
Yeah, I mean, being away from my kids, it's affected me more than anybody can believe, because I went from getting them ready in the morning, taking them to school, making sure they had breakfast, making sure they was at daycare, then from daycare get transferred to school, to me not being able to do it at all, and hoping to God that somebody's out there doing it. As far as in detention, we are treated like dogs in here. And number one is like the staff don't look at us as human beings, because we're here for immigration, so they can do whatever they want.
No, and I know you've told me before that part of what's been hard about being in detention is sort of like its open-ended nature, that you kind of don't have a sense of how long it's going to last. Can you maybe tell me a little bit more about that?
Being in immigration custody is like you've been a cow led to slaughter. You know you're going to slaughter, but you don't know when. You sit here days and years on without even knowing anything. And when you talk to the immigration so-called officers that come on the block, all they tell you is, I don't know, get in contact with your deportation officer. So you don't know. You're just here forever. You don't know. Like in criminal court, they'll tell you, okay, you got to go for arraignment, you got to go for sentencing, and this is how much time you got to do. Within immigration court, they just tell you for the foreseeable future. I mean, and you never know when you're going to be here, how long, and that's very, very sad, because mm-hmm. there's people in here that's been here for 2 years, people in here been here for 3 years, and mm-hmm. there's no telling when you're going to be reunited with your family and loved ones.
I know you've told me a little bit before about detention affecting your ability to fight your immigration case. Can you talk about that too?
Yeah, I mean, you've been in immigration. You cannot fight no immigration case from inside for the simple fact that you don't have access any hard evidence. Like, paperwork you guys need from us, we have to rely on people out there. And people out on the outside, they have their own life. I'm not saying like they're not willing to help you, but they don't really know the specific of what you're trying to get across to them, and then there comes the conflict because everybody's arguing and fighting and trying to get their paperwork together, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So I know during all the months of detention you've suffered, you've never gotten a bond hearing as to whether your detention's actually justified. If you were to get a bond hearing, what would you want to tell the immigration judge?
First of all, I would tell the immigration judge, you guys are actually ruining a lot of lives, you know. You're mm-hmm. taking people away from their family that can actually provide for their family
mm-hmm.
and putting them in these jails. You actually harming these kids that have to actually grow up without mm-hmm. their parent. And growing up without your parent, that makes you resentful, that makes you hate authority, that makes you just
right.
feel as though you're worthless. And for a kid to grow up feeling worthless is like, it's not fair at all, because now I have daughters. Who's going to be there for them? Who's going to shelter them? Who's going to, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I was just going to tell the judge, like, that's not fair at all.
So I have another question that's somewhat similar. As you know, we have a new administration, and as you've probably heard, there's talk once again of comprehensive immigration reform. So one thing I wanted to ask you is if you had anything you want to say to the new administration, to Congress, to other policymakers, as they sort of take another hard look at our country's immigration laws.
You people should actually look at the person's life, if they are really a threat to your society or not. Not like people that's actually out there taking care of their kids. Now, I understand if somebody's out there doing forgery or shooting at people or robbing people. Now, they'll become threat to society anywhere in the country. But if it's just people with minor offenses that don't really make no sense, I think they should be given a second chance, even putting on immigration probation or even ankle. They do that for regular criminals. Why can't immigration do that?
Mm-hmm.
You are taking somebody away from their family. So before you take these people away from their family, give them a chance to prove themselves, whether they made a mistake years back and now they've changed their life or not, you know, and
mm-hmm.
that's not fair at all. And why they doing the reform laws, they need to check into the immigration housing. What I mean by that is the jail they put us in, like, these staffs are not even equipped to handle immigration cases. Some of them don't speak no Spanish, some of them don't even relate to us. Like, our religions and all that stuff is not even respected in this jail, you know?
Thanks for listening to this ACLU podcast. To learn more about Aleo's case and the ACLU's efforts challenging the prolonged detention of immigrants, visit www.aclu.org/prolongeddetention.